Hello and welcome to another edition of FilmWhy Spotlight, a special edition of the Why Haven't You Seen This Film podcast, where instead of having a single guest who introduces me to a film I've never seen before, and I introduce them to a superhero or comic book film, I speak with several fans of an underappreciated superhero film and find out why it's so special to them. As always, I'm your host Bubba Wheat from Flights, Tights, and Movie Nights, and the film I'll be shining the spotlight on this time around is Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. If there's one thing that you might know about Edgar Wright, is that it takes him a long time to make a movie, but when it does, it comes out as a tightly woven tapestry. The initial Scott Pilgrim comic book, which at the time had only released three of its eventual six volumes, was given to Wright all the way back in 2004 during a screening of Shaun of the Dead. And while many who have seen the film now agree that what he created through the course of those 6 years is an amazing film, when it was released in theaters, it didn't quite live up to the buzz that it had generated in the online community. Despite having great buzz on social media sites like Twitter and an impressive preview screening at the San Diego Comic Con, when it was released in theaters, it opened to a dismal $10 million opening, which was even smaller than the other film that had massive online buzz just 6 years earlier, Snakes on a Plane. But somewhat surprisingly, most of the fans that I reached out to actually did manage to see this one in theaters.
Hi, I'm Debbie Rolfe, and I'm from the You Haven't Seen podcast. No, I watched the movie in college. I was introduced to the comics by a guy I was dating in high school, and then the next guy I dated, Eleanor Fritz States, he, you know, asked me, so have you seen Scott Pilgrim? And I was like, well, okay, this is going to be a thing until I see it, I guess. And so we watched it, and then I loved it. But I always thought it was funny, just the fact that I was introduced to it through a series of exes.
I'm Nikhat, and I'm from the Across the Universe, the Chicks with Accents podcast. I watched it. I think it's basically because I like Michael Cera, and I like the name of the movie. I think I saw it on DVDs. Someone had it or something. I don't remember exactly why. I definitely remember not watching it in a theater because I would kill to watch it in a theater.
Hi, I'm Stefan Gagne, and I write science fiction novels over at stefangagne.com. I went out on day one to see this film in theaters, which was kind of a task because it unfortunately opened up alongside Eat, Pray, Love and The Expendables, which means everybody was going to those theaters while mine was practically empty.
Hi, I'm Amy Taylor, and I'm the writer and director of the web series Jess Archer Versus. I had actually been writing, so my web series, I used the same characters for my thesis film in film school. And I was writing that thesis film, and I had been watching Spaced a lot, which is Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost. They did a TV show, the 2001-ish, I want to say. And so I had been watching that while I was writing my thesis, and, you know, I was drawing heavily from Spaced in terms of style and, like, getting that in my head. And then, you know, I loved Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. And so I was always like, what is he going to do next? And I'm very excited to see. So when I, you know, saw that Scott Pilgrim was coming out, I was like, yes, going to see it in the theater. It's happening. So, yeah.
Scott Pilgrim might not have succeeded in theaters, but it has grown to become a cult hit with fans for various reasons. One is that it seems to resonate with a certain subset of culture that grew up in the 80s and also grew up with video games. It's now something that permeates our culture, whether or not you even play them. This year alone, there are no less than four video game movies hitting theaters. But even if you're not someone who grew up with video games, there's something about the world of Scott Pilgrim that creates its own fantasy world. Edgar Wright had this to say in an interview with Movies Ireland.
Raison d'etre of the whole piece is that you're essentially seeing the film that's playing in Scott Pilgrim's head, and that Scott Pilgrim is a character in his early 20s who has grown up on Saturday morning cartoons and comic books and video games and probably too much sugary product, and you're watching kind of like how he would like to live his life. Even like the look of Sex Bomb when they're playing and they have kind of lightning bolts and jagged lines coming out. I would describe it to the animators. I said it should look like a 14-year-old's idea of a rock band.
Video games have saturated the culture so much that you kind of get some of that. Because I was never, you know, I was never really allowed to play video games that much when I was little. But I felt like I recognized a lot of it just from, you know, consuming other media.
Well, I've been a gamer all my life. I mean, from Pong to the Atari 2600 to 8-bit computers all the way on through today. Although I never actually owned a Nintendo Entertainment System, which is what most of the jokes in the movie are based on. But I had friends who did, and I cherished the few times I could actually get over to their house and get my hands on one of those sweet boxy NES controllers.
I actually have almost zero background in video games, because we never really had a console growing up, and it just was never something that I did. But it's something I've started getting into now more as an adult than I was as a kid. But so a lot of the video game references were actually lost on me the first time that I watched it, which is pretty embarrassing. Just is going to sound so lame. I've always enjoyed watching people play them because I didn't grow up playing them. I don't have whatever motor skills, I guess, you need to be good at most video games. And so I would watch my friends, and then when I rewatched Scott Pilgrim about a year later, it suddenly made so much more sense to me, because I was like, oh my goodness, I missed so many references. And so then I reread the comics as well and actually like understood more of everything.
Yeah, and no background in video games. I'm terrible at video games. So I still don't completely understand. I'm pretty sure I still don't understand some of the references.
Wow. Zelda, Tetris, that's kind of a big question.
There's plenty to praise about Scott Pilgrim, but one of the most memorable things about any good comedy is that it has to be quotable. And in that respect, Scott Pilgrim holds up with dozens of great lines of dialogue that fits next to the stylistic and kinetic visuals.
Steven Stills, when he's freaking out while the first band is playing, and you just see him wandering around and all of his text is on the bottom of the screen with his screaming.
She's in a fight with Scott Pilgrim, and she says,
"Punch me in the boob! Prepare to die, obviously."
That's so great. That makes me laugh every time.
I like the Roxy. She just slips obviously into every other word in her sentence.
Obviously.
I'd say the moment that really sticks with me isn't one of the jokes. It's actually more of just this really rapid sequence of events. When Scott's doing his first concert and suddenly the first evil ex bursts in and Scott's just totally dumbstruck by this turn of event. He's like,
"What did I do? What do I do?"
And then his roommate just shouts, "Why?" And so he just takes this martial arts dance and wham, we are into the first fight scene. I mean, it's a small moment, but it marks the transition between this just being a wacky screwball comedy and an action movie.
And then, let's see what else. Oh, well, I like the vegan patrol and that whole fight. And his kind of Scott Pilgrim's corny line.
"You once were a vegan, but now you will be gone."
Vegan.
Which just makes me laugh because it's so dumb.
I love when...
"Hey, Como, you know everyone, right?"
"Yeah, pretty much I do.
You know this one girl with hair like this?"
"Yes, that's Ramona Flowers."
Shows up the sketch of Ramona's hair.
I don't think people use it that much, but the Jason Schwartzman character, he says,
"Music to my ear holes."
Which I actually say a lot.
Besides the quotability factor, what really helps sell Scott Pilgrim to its fans are the impressive visuals and kinetic editing. Rather than a film that looks and feels like a typical film, Edgar Wright was able to craft something that feels like a cross between a video game, anime, and a martial arts film.
I mean, I just like the way that it sets the tone and the style from the very beginning, with like the logo is like the 8-bit, and then the credits, you get sort of that elasticity of time and space because you pull out from Scott and his band playing, and it's like the room just got so much bigger. Well, I've always been really interested in Edgar Wright's use of transitions and the way he sort of plays with time and space. The way, you know, it's sort of very elastic and people are moving between time and location, and you're just expected to follow it as an audience member.
They didn't try to explain all the weird stuff. They just show Ramona rollerblading through Scott Pilgrim's dream, and you just accept that as that's the reality of this world, and we don't need to go into it any further, where she just mentions, "Oh yeah, he punched a hole in the moon for me."
amazing kinetic energy of the editing, of Edgar Wright's editing, is just, it carries it through, it keeps it entertaining, and it rewards you for multiple viewings, because you'll notice background details that are worked in there, different layers the story's operating on. All of Edgar Wright's movies do that. Every time you watch them, you'll discover something new that only makes sense in hindsight.
There's so much happening in every frame, and there's so many details to the characters that are just great, and they're maybe not foregrounded. But, like, the character of young Neil, he's so funny because he's always copying, you know, either what Scott's doing or what the lead singer is doing. And I just think that's so funny. But he's such a minor character, and you don't always notice him, but he's in the background doing it.
Of stuff. It's just a very fast-paced editing style, but you don't ever lose anything because there's so much visual information. And a lot of that is expressed through the words and the typography on the screen, too.
I love the comic book style where it does visual onomatopoeia, highlight lines, speed lines, because it ramps up the intensity of everything you're looking at with visual cues. It kind of reminds me of how videos on YouTube are done these days, where things like rapidly animated captions or clip art are used to emphasize key moments and keep the presentation like lively.
I am a video editor. That's what I do. And one of my inspirations is Edgar Wright's films, because I love his visual comedy and I love the editing style of the things that he directs. And I haven't done anything close to, like, I haven't worked on a feature yet or anything like that, but it's something that I often go back to just to feel inspired and get pumped about my job. This movie specifically, a lot of the frames of the screen are almost like directly lifted from the comic book. He does a lot of stuff with typography that I really love, and the split screens in different ways than just a, you know, line down the middle, right and left screen.
And I was rewatching it recently, and like I don't think I ever noticed it before, but like all the different aspect ratios in it. It's such an engaging movie visually. Like, there's so much happening at any point of time.
I learned the bass line from Final Fantasy II.
And even with the visual elements and dialogue, Edgar Wright managed to put in extra background visual elements that appeared throughout the film. Each of the seven evil exes were represented with a number. Matthew Patel was that one guy, and he had a single chevron on his jacket sleeve. Lucas Lee had several number twos throughout a scene, and so on. In the DVD commentary, Edgar Wright discusses this numerology a little bit.
Now, this title sequence here, which is done by the amazing people at Shinola, is the start of a numerically obsessed film. I really wanted this to be like have a kind of Sesame Street feel to Scott Pilgrim, and like the letter X is very important, and then also have a number ranking throughout the film. So there are, and actually within this title sequence, every time you see one of the actors' names, you have the X's and numbers. And then Coke Zero is because as a part of the numerical
the numbering
thing,
system.
The numbering system. Scott is zero. Scott is a zero, Gideon is seven. And we had this kind of, you know, we want to have this ranking chart. Now, I have to point out some twos. There is a two on Lucas Lee's car coming up right now. You see it?
Beautiful,
beautiful car.
Two. There's a Tibetan two on his shoulder, his little neck tattoo on the
is
other
side. Is that what
side. That is? Yeah, it's a Tibetan two. And on his belt, two X's.
That's right.
There you go. If we're talking about threes, the three in this scene is pretty obvious. But not just the three on Brandon's chest, but also the stripes on his arm as well. Yes. He's got three kind of sports stripes. There you go. The 4.5 there. Hey, right. Well, here's the idea is that like Scott is wearing a 4.5 t-shirt. And now that would seem to jump out of the... That would seem to jump out of the theory is why is Scott wearing a 4.5 t-shirt? Because he's not one of the X's. But I'm thinking this is the point where he's going towards the dark side.
Mm. Yeah, he's the 4.5 X right now.
Yeah, right now he has the potential to... I mean, you deal with this in the books as well, the potential of that it could be so easy if... And why... One of the things we tried to do in the script when we reduced the timeline is take this idea of if Ramona changes her hair every week and a half, Scott Pilgrim could be gone in a week and a half. And if he is, like, he absolutely has the capability to become a jealous asshole and become one of the X's.
Yeah.
Would you agree, Brian Lee O'Malley?
I would agree.
Well, it's interesting because the number thing is partly from the comics and partly Edgar Wright's creation, but Scott was never associated with Zero in the comics. Whereas in the movie, I feel like they use the Zero imagery, like he drinks Coke Zero, he's wearing the Zero shirt from Smashing Pumpkins, stuff like that. I see Scott's role as Zero emphasizing his status of being completely empty. He's this passive guy who's incapable of committing to any decisions. He doesn't want to go get haircuts. He won't break up with his girlfriend even when he sees something new. And generally, he just sort of goes along with everything around him, even the fighting. I mean, he's only fighting the evil exes because that's expected of him. He's kind of immature and underdeveloped and a total zero. And this really only changes towards the end of the film, when he finally realizes that he can't win the day just fighting for other people or fighting for what's expected of him. He draws out the power of true love, and that's not enough. He gets destroyed in the end. What he has to do is he has to fight for his own self-respect. He has to grow as an individual and push past just doing what everybody wants him to do. I've always liked that because it's kind of one of the best themes in literature, is that you can't just say, oh, true love will solve everything. No. If you're not healthy yourself, you can't be in a healthy relationship.
I don't know. He's kind of like a reset for Ramona. You know, she comes to Toronto to start over again after this disaster with Gideon. So in terms of that, I guess he's sort of like a zero. But he does have the potential to become an evil ex, I think. Because Scott Pilgrim he's not a completely likable person. He has his flaws. And I can see there being a scenario where they have a bad breakup.
Equivalent of like all the crazy stuff that happens in it. It's basically about like, you know, how you have to like measure up to like your partner's like past experiences, and you kind of have to fight them and all of that. So like it can mean like he has like low self-esteem as it is. Like in the end, he gains the power of self-esteem. I guess it makes more sense in the self-esteem way for me, but he's just start, like, you know, she also says like he's an evil ex waiting to happen. So maybe he'll be like the next one for the next one. Like a lot of things. I don't know. It's cool.
Like him being, I guess, as the story ends, he's like the last ex, you know, so it's like X's and O's. I've always thought of it more as that, where they're all like, you know, the kisses and hugs and stuff, X's and O's, and they're the X's, but he's the O because he's the one that she ends up with. I also like, because Wallace is the voice of reason for Scott, which he's so funny though. And it's rare that the voice of reason in a story isn't like super composed and like noble. And Wallace is such a goofball, and he's, you know, stealing everyone's boyfriend left and right. And he's still like Scott's like conscience.
Yeah, which it's nicely subversive that it's not the whole true love saving the day thing that actually saves the day. Because what happens is really everything gets reset. Scott and Ramona basically agree to start this entire courtship all over again, putting aside the baggage of what's come before. And they'll come at it as better people, as whole people, instead of as just whatever they were trapped in their past. I mean, Scott's dating a high schooler. He's clearly never gotten out of his high school mentality. He hasn't grown up. Not until the end. Friend, I knew you were. Our coming goal was
waiting for the world to end. And while I didn't get the chance to talk with anyone who worked on the movie, one of the fans of this film was inspired by Scott Pilgrim, as well as the other works of Edgar Wright, and Amy Taylor talked a little bit about how this film inspired her current creation, Jess Archer Versus.
I would say probably the sense of humor a little bit, in terms of, Spaced especially, his TV show, it was just full of pop culture references, and I tend to do that a lot. And then in terms of style, I do try and copy, really, a lot of his transitions and just the way that he moves the camera and the space. I mean, whip pans, and I think in the first 5 minutes of Scott Pilgrim, you get all these different examples. Just the different transitions that he uses, like, you know, he's talking to Knives in a record store, and then someone walks in front of the camera, and then they're on the bus. Or he's, you know, Scott Pilgrim is looking out into space, and he's in one location, and then someone talks to him, bam, you know, they're in another location. They're back at, you know, rehearsing with the band. So that kind of thing I think is probably the most influenced thing that I do.
You watch it and you're like, this is ridiculous and it's really cool. And people were paid to make this for their jobs.
Belated coming of age story, or you can look at it just as awesome action fight scenes and wacky visual gags. It works on either level.
Someone's happy.
Well, someone got to second base last night, and someone has a second date tonight.
If you've made it this far into this podcast and have never seen Scott Pilgrim, I would suggest that you definitely give it a try, especially if you're someone who grew up in the NES era of video games, or are a fan of anime, Jackie Chan, or Edgar Wright, or plenty of other things that this film references. There's just so much to love about Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, and there's so much going on that it only gets better with repeat viewings. And before I wrap things up, I'll send you off with one last bit from the DVD commentary with Edgar Wright.
Probably the perfect way to watch this film is watch it at normal speed, and then anytime it comes to an action scene, slow it down on the frame advance, and then and then you can look through it like you would read a Frank Miller book. Is read it fast once, second time slow it down, third watch just look for numbers and X's, fourth watch just watch Johnny Simmons, fifth watch...
Watch it backwards.
Yeah. Is there an album that like you'd like to, you think it should be played alongside Scott Pilgrim, Dark Side of the Moon style?
Yeah, maybe something by the Smashing Pumpkins.
Mm. Oh, there you go. Well, obviously like, you know, The Infinite Sadness, Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness.
Yeah, that's a pretty long, I guess that's probably about, it's about 2 hours. I think it'll
there
probably work.
And once again, I'd like to thank everyone that took the time out to talk to me about Scott Pilgrim versus the World. If you want to hear more from me, you can find my writing at FlightsTightsAndMovieNights.com. You can find me on Twitter at BubbaWheat, and you can also hear more episodes of FilmWise on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. The next episode of FilmWise Spotlight will be on 1984 Supergirl, so if you're interested in being on that episode, feel free to contact me. You can also email me at BubbaWheat@MSN.com. And if you want to know more about where to find the guests of this episode, here they are again to tell you, or you can also find links in the show notes. Until next time.
My name is Stefan Gagne. I write science fiction novels, which you can read for free over at stefangagne.com. Right now I'm working on a cyberpunk epic called Floating Point. And you can also check me out on Twitter at twitter.com/twoflower. That's two flower as in like the character from the Discworld books. Yep. I'm a big old fanboy.
I'm Debbie Rolfe. I'm a video editor, and you can find me on the internet at the You Haven't Seen Podcast, which is YHS_podcast on Twitter. Or you can find me on social media at DaRolf, DA_Rolf.
Hi, I'm Amy Taylor. I'm the writer and director of the web series Jess Archer Versus. You can find me on the interwebs. On Twitter is at Walking Candy Apple, WALKN Candy Apple. That's a Seinfeld reference, if anyone gets that. And my web series is at Jess Archer Versus, Jess Archer VS.
Hi, I'm Nikhat Zera, and I blog at the Across the Universe, the Chicks with Accents podcast. And I used to write at beingnormajean.blogspot.com, but I kind of don't anymore. And I'm on Twitter at Nikhat_Z.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.